Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday, one and all. And we hope here at Civic Media this summer to make your Fridays a little happier with Free Ticket Friday. Get your cell phones out. Download that Civic Media app. You can get it for free anywhere you get your apps from. And text the word HOME, H-O-M-E, that is home, as in I was born and raised in Milwaukee. It is my home, H-O-M-E. Text it in via the app right now. Get it in before 5 o'clock. That will get you entered to win 4 tickets to the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants on Saturday, August 23rd. They're beautiful club-level tickets. And it is the Euchre Golf Umbrella Giveaway Day. Even if you don't dig the game so much, you might want to go just to get your hands on that beautiful umbrella. Again, text in the word HOME, H-O-M-E, via the Civic Media app right now. Get it in before 5 to enter to win those 4 tickets. And don't forget to mark your calendars. I'll be talking with Brewers CEO Rick Schlesinger next Wednesday, August 20th at 5:30 about the miracle in Milwaukee. But right now we've got Marquette University Professor Lowell Barrington. He's a professor of political science there to help us all understand what exactly is going on at an army base just outside Anchorage, Alaska, between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin today, and what the implications are both domestically here in the United States for our support for Ukraine, as well as longer-term implications. Welcome back to the program, Professor Barrington. Thank you for making time. I know you're on the road.
Hi, Maggie. Yeah, it's great to be back with you.
Let's set the stage. The optics, I don't know. I know you've been driving. The optics of Putin's arrival today were kind of, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance, I guess, is a fair way to describe this. President Trump's arrival in Anchorage, as well as Vladimir Putin's arrival, they were coordinated. They basically landed at the same time. Donald Trump had given some comments earlier in the day en route to Alaska aboard Air Force One. We may get into a few of those. But the leaders stepped off their planes almost simultaneously. This is at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage at about 11:09 a.m. local time. That's about 2 p.m. here in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. They descended the steps from their airplanes. They shook hands, smiling. There was a lot of, like, glad-handing, sort of, for lack of a better phrase, affectionate touching. They strode down the red carpet together, smiling. They shook hands again. They didn't take or answer any questions from reporters. It was kind of weird, both when they were on the tarmac and then when they reached inside this building. Very weird, because Donald Trump always just kind of talks to reporters. And here's the other thing that was quite unusual. There was a limousine there to transport Vladimir Putin. It is generally the diplomatic norm that heads of state don't ride together, especially in the case of these sorts of peace summits. Putin had his own car, so did Trump, the Beast. They actually both got into the Beast alone, nobody else in the car, which Professor Barrington brought up memories for me of Donald Trump sitting alone with Vladimir Putin back in Helsinki in 2018. We've got some of that sound. We may get to it. But with all of that, did you find any of the visuals this afternoon, Professor, a little bit odd or at least surprising in the amount of pomp and circumstance? Were you surprised that they rode together? I mean, it's highly unusual.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't maybe surprised to the extent that I think one of the things about this summit is we've seen from the Trump administration side over the last few days a real kind of scaling back of expectations in
yes.
terms of what's actually going to come out of it. So I think some of this, you know, as you said, the kind of pomp and circumstance is to try to show that it's a real thing, even if at the end of the day, we don't get a lot out of it. I did see a few things, and I guess I'm not a huge, like, you know, body language person in figuring out what those things mean. I will say it was odd to see Trump kind of slightly clapping as Putin was walking toward him.
Yes.
That's a very, again, kind of very deferential kind of thing to do, right? So I did think that was weird. I will agree with you that I am not thrilled with the idea that they were riding, you know, kind of together without people with them. on the way over. And in fact, I imagine some people in Europe are not thrilled either. There were European officials who were overjoyed to hear that this was not going to be a one-on-one meeting, that there was going to be at least kind of three-on-three, and the, you know, the Secretary of State on our side, the Foreign Minister on their side is going to be there, special envoys are going to be there. Like, this group thing was a way of kind of protecting perhaps Ukraine's interest from, you know, Trump doing something that you know, later on they'd have to try to address. So I think that is a concern that they had that period of time. I don't know that much probably happened during it, but again, the visual of it, and again, for Europe really hoping this wasn't going to turn into a kind of Helsinki rerun, you know, I think there's probably some concerned people there.
Yeah, again, the two of these guys together alone, I think even Trump supporters might get a little nervous about that. And in case anybody forgot why people get concerned about things like this, let's just run the tape from Donald Trump. This is the press conference after he and Putin back in 2018 met for hours alone. He was asked a question. Well, I think we've got actually the question and then his answer. Take a listen to this. It's in case you've forgotten.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
People came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
Yeah, that's why people get nervous about Trump being alone with Putin, because Putin is a former intelligence operative with the KGB. Donald Trump is not an intelligence operative on any level, but we're going to set that aside. Professor Barrington, I want you to help us understand the various regions of Ukraine, because most of the commentators that I have seen are talking about the possibility of some kind of land swap or land concession from Ukraine to Russia. So help us understand where this is and the various regions of Ukraine and what's actually on the table.
Yeah, thank you, Meg. That's a great question. I think I will say that the territorial concessions piece of this is central. If there's even going to be a ceasefire, not just to mention an actual, you know, end of the conflict itself, but just a ceasefire, that Putin has laid out that Russia expects on their side to keep the territory it already has under its control, plus additional territory in a couple of the regions that it doesn't even control yet. And, you know, lots of other things, right, that Ukraine must basically say it will never approach being a NATO member again, like all these kinds of things, right, that they have laid out. But what we have in essentially an understanding the territorial piece of this is five regions, I guess I'd highlight. The first one's Crimea. It's the one that has a very interesting history, by the way, given to Ukraine in 1954. It used to be part of the Russia, part of the Soviet Union, was transferred to Ukraine under Khrushchev. But, you know, taken over by Russia in 2014 when they invaded at that point. And that is one that, again, is the going to be the hardest for Ukraine to possibly get back, right? So that's one that I think as we're thinking of what's realistic about what Ukraine might get back from Russian control, that one's hard to picture. All these are then kind of successively to the northeast. So Kherson is a really important region because it does have the coastline and an area where, again, there would be important ports for Ukraine if it controlled it. They don't control those areas. Russia controls about two-thirds of the area of Kherson. Zaporizhia is to the northeast of that then, and that is, again, the majority of the coast of the Sea of Azov, which is a part of the Black Sea. That is in that region of Ukraine. Again, Russia controls about two-thirds of that. And by the way, Putin has mentioned wanting not just more territory in Kherson and Zaporizhia, but at a minimum, the two capital cities of those two areas, which right now Russia does not have control of. And then the two main ones I think people talk a lot about is the Donbas region, is the broader region called Donbas, is actually two regions, Donetsk and Luhansk. Russia has almost complete control of Luhansk. Donetsk, it has most of the territory controlled. And those were areas that, again, it got in control in 2014 through kind of using proxy forces and then sending in their own troops and things as well. So there's been a kind of ongoing conflict people forget about in Donetsk and Luhansk and in Crimea between Ukraine and Russia, you know, since 2014. 2022 became the last big push then of Russian troops in to try to grab more of these territories. So if you picture that many areas of Ukraine that Russia controls, and then picture that most of that is along a coastline, that means that right now without that area, Ukraine is basically down to Odessa as one port that it controls,
right,
which is a very difficult situation economically for it, right? So Ukraine's going to want at least port access, at least I would assume that they'd want the port access back from Zaporizhia and Kherson. They're also going to want as much as they can get of Donetsk and Luhansk. And again, Putin's going to push for more territory even than they currently control. So understanding the importance of the territory to Ukraine, but also the way in which Russia's got the upper hand right now, and in fact, in the last, you know, month or so of the war, has also been gaining territory in Donetsk kind of as we speak. So there's a lot going on there, and I think it means that it's a pretty complicated situation. For a long time, Zelensky had been saying nothing about territorial concessions. We're not even going to talk about it. He continued to say that about a week ago, that basically it's unconstitutional for him to do that. But the reality for him is that even his own public opinion on this is starting to change a bit in Ukraine. Used to be about 90% of the population of Ukraine in really legitimate surveys are being done, said absolutely zero territorial concessions, even Crimea to Russia. It's now down to about a third of the people that are actually open to some degree of territorial concessions, maybe upwards of 40%. So I do think, again, it is going to be the case that this probably has to involve territorial concessions in some way. And I actually think there's an argument. I don't think this makes me very popular in the Ukrainian studies community, but there is an argument that some limited territorial concessions, particularly in Donetsk and Luhansk, might actually be in Ukraine's long-term stability interests.
Fascinating. Folks, we've got from Marquette University, Professor of Political Science, Lowell Barrington. We're talking about the summit that is going on right now with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska at a base just outside of Anchorage. They are right now, as I am speaking to you, in those discussions with Donald Trump. He has Secretary of State Marco Rubio, as well as his special envoy, Steve Witkoff. Putin is joined by Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, as well as at least, I believe, one other staffer. So there's basically three gentlemen from each side, and these discussions are ongoing right now. When we come back with Professor Barrington, we're going to talk about the implications for international peace, diplomacy, of the fact that we are discussing, that on the table are territorial concessions when Russia unprovoked invaded a sovereign country. We'll also address the fact that Zelensky is nowhere to be found at this summit. Don't go anywhere. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.